We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Kyle Schatzberger and David Kahn with you live on the Varsity Channel on YouTube, second podcast this week. Ahead of the final regular season of the weekend for most schools on the diamond, unless you're in the Big West and you don't have a conference tournament, for example, schools like UC Santa Barbara and Cal State Fullerton, they have two regular season weekends remaining. So David Kahn and I are here to preview the upcoming weekend. The stakes are as ratcheted up as ever. And David Kahn, for the first time, if you're watching live on YouTube, again, we love all the OG audio listeners, College Sports Now, wherever you get your podcasts, at Kyle Schatz, at SportsCon4, at CS Now Tweets is how you can interact with us. We'll have our PGA Championship picks. Before we get off the air here today, over the next hour, though, we'll talk plenty of baseball. And Kahn, viewers are seeing No Stash Schatz for the first time in the flesh, not to mention, what am I repping? A big Donkey brand hat. Steven Chalk. That's right. College baseball is rad, folks. Yeah, and so is my face.
You're counteracting the no longer stash-filled face that you've had for the last 3 years with just a beautiful beige college baseball is rad cap, courtesy of Big Donkey 47 himself, Steven Chalk. You purchased the hat. It looks great. And you know what? I actually have gotten used to you without the stash. It took me 4 days, but I've now gotten used to you with no facial hair. It's weird how quickly I have assimilated to your new look, but you do pull it off.
I think I'm a beautiful man, if I don't say so myself. Even more beautiful without the mustache. The mustache is dead. Look, you can always grow it back. It was time for a change, as you indicated. 3 years. It would have been 3 years in August with just stash only. But I did have facial hair, a full beard, from really March of the pandemic 2020 on until I went down just to the stash in August. So it's been a long run of facial hair covering up my face, but it's good to breathe again. Yeah. It's good to show people who I am beneath those grizzly hairs.
The swirl is gone.
The swirl. Everything just pasted to my face, especially above the upper lip. It's gone. You can see me. You can enjoy me for who I am and how I entered this world. 34 years ago, okay? This is how I entered the world, looking just like this. I didn't have glasses, but I saw the light 34 years ago, and I looked just like this. I haven't changed one bit, trust me.
And when you saw the light, you just thrust yourself out of there. I mean, you didn't wait to be pulled. You jumped into the world, as you do everything in life.
Oh, and if the world knew I would be this stash-wielding, now clean-shaven, sexy underwear-equipped, sports talking, play-by-play dreamer, terrific socialite, and
these are all true things.
Tremendous human being who's friends with all.
Yeah,
the world never would have seen this coming. I'll tell you that much. 34 years ago. So,
no, there's no one like you, Kyle Schatzberger. It's a true statement.
Fans of Wake Forest never saw this coming. They got their 43rd win on the season, the midweek blanking UNCW, the number one team in the land, who had Wrapped up already the ACC regular season championship for the first time in forever, trying to get to Omaha for the first time since 1955, which is when they won the national championship. But, Con, 43 wins, another first for this Demon Deacon squad being rewarded. We'll give you the lineup card coming up. We'll preview the weekend slate. Wake Forest has Virginia Tech at home. Final home series. The Hokies with tons to play for. As they're well outside, I think on the wrong side of the bubble. But who knows? Maybe they can come into Winston-Salem. I highly doubt it. Get a sweep. You know, make a run through Durham, not Charlotte, next week in the ACC tournament. A lot of teams needing to win a series this weekend and also make some hay in their league tournaments next week to put themselves on the right side of the bubble. Some tremendous elimination games, potentially hosting games. Again, stakes very high this weekend. But, Con, 43 wins for Wake Forest, a team who I learned I've got a source very close to the situation, okay? My intel tells me nobody on this Wake Forest team will even utter the word Omaha. It's Nebraska. Oh. We're trying to get to Nebraska. Oh. They will not use the word Omaha.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Much. So the Omadeeks are dead.
No, the Omadeeks are very much alive in our eyes.
Okay.
But they do not consider themselves. They're not trying to put the cart before the horse. They're not trying to jinx it.
I like it.
You know, it's a superstitious
thing. One game at a time.
Baseball is the most superstitious sport of all, and hey, it's worked out for them.
It certainly has. And here's the thing. We've harped on this over and over and over again, but it's the pitching, right? I mean, everyone talks about the big boppers and Brock Wilkin and Nick Kurtz and Adam Cicere, and you could name, you know, everybody in their lineup almost is someone who can hit the ball out of the yard. Justin Johnson has certainly come on for them as well, but it's the pitching. It's Rhett Lauder. It's Sean Sullivan. It's Josh Hartle. It's Seth Keener. They have a midweek stud. I mean, and they had Reed Muscolo as well, who started off being their really good midweek guy, and now Seth Keener has the lowest ERA of anyone on the team. And I laugh not because, you know, it's funny in a bad way. It's funny in an amazing way. How many different pieces this Wake Forest team has. And I almost wonder, and there was actually, I was involved in a Twitter conversation about this earlier this week, and I think it's important to talk about.
Les Johns, right?
Les Johns, yeah. He, the publisher for Demon Deacon Digest at 247 Sports and the writer for Demon Sports Extra, Sports Extra.
Big friend of the program.
Huge friend of the
Used
program.
Used to be a regular guest of mine when I was in local radio.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, glad to interact with anybody on Twitter who wants to talk college baseball for sure, or really anything. I'll create an opinion about anything. It's just what I do. But, you know, Les Johns posed the question, who is the ACC coach of the year? And he put up four guys. I retweeted it and said, I think it's really down to two, in because he said Chris Pollard and Mike Gambino at Duke and Boston College, respectively, also throwing in Eric Bakich and Tom Walter at Clemson and Wake Forest. I said, I think it's probably going to come down to two between Bakich at Clemson and Tom Walter at Wake Forest. And my point was, I think Eric Bakich might have the slight edge simply because the expectations for Clemson were not as high as they were for Wake Forest. Now, nobody expected Wake Forest to have the season they're having. A program record, 43 wins, the best, you know, the best team in the country right now at number one, supplanting LSU a couple of weeks ago. You know, top marks offensively, top marks on the mound. They're stellar all throughout. But people expected this Demon Deacons team to be good. They were ranked to begin the season. They were ranked really high to begin the season as well. Clemson did not have as high of the expectations that Wake Forest has, and yet they are putting themselves on the precipice of being a top eight national seed. And from where they started in the ACC, I believe it was 2-7 was their beginning in the ACC, and now they've ripped off six consecutive series going into the final weekend of the regular season. I think that more is the resume for a coach of the year, because Eric Bakich has turned this program around in 1 year, whereas Tom Walter already had this gargantuan beast of a program, and they just did what they were supposed to do, and in doing so became the number one team in the country.
Yeah, Wake Forest had been scratching the ceiling and really tearing down the ceiling,
yeah,
you know, in terms of the expectations for a handful of years now. You know, there had been sort of a cap that had been put on the Demon Deacons. A lot of hype, a lot of good vibes, a lot of, you know, optimism around this program over the last handful of years, even more. You know, I think back, I'm trying to think, when I moved back from Louisiana to North Carolina in 2016, I want to say it was that 2017, was that the Gainesville Regional where Wake Forest, I think it was 2017 or 18, where Wake Forest went down to Gainesville.
I believe it was 18.
No, it was 17, because that was the year Florida won it all, right? They took Florida.
No, Florida won it in 17.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it was 17 that Wake Forest was down there at the Gainesville Regional. Yeah. They came this close to knocking off who would become the national champion. Florida won over LSU in an all-SEC title series back in 2017, but it was a super long, super regional. It was stretched out because of hellacious weather throughout the entire weekend. And the Demon Deacons took Florida all the way to the brink of elimination and nearly punched their ticket to Omaha then. It was since that point, I think that was really the true arrival point for this Demon Deacons team back in 2017, while they had been building up towards something very special. For them to get to that point and be oh so close, I think since then, everybody connected to Wake Forest has believed. They know that they can break down that wall and get to Omaha. But nationally, I still feel like there was always, and certainly your college baseball fan and your average fan in general who doesn't care about the smallest P5 in all of the country, they're not really giving much credence. It's not a believable thing that Wake Forest, they're a flash in the pan, you know, type of thing. They hadn't gotten to a super since. No, am I right? So that was it in 2017. Yeah. So now, after all this optimism year after year, to finally be in the position they're at, now this will be a massive failure if they do not even make a super. Are you kidding me? They don't even come out of Winston? I mean, it'd be hard to find somebody echoing or even uttering those thoughts around these parts because this has become such a baseball-centric area. And I'm talking about Wake Forest in general. We record in Winston-Salem. But people believe. People are showing up. People are behind this program. But to your point about Tom Walter – and the soliloquy you just went on in terms of Eric Backich being ACC Coach of the Year, yeah, I don't think there's any question because Wake Forest has done it with built-up expectations and optimism over time. They were expected to at least compete, not be number one. Sure, nobody expected them to be this good, okay? To have a pitching staff that is as ranking near the top as one of the premier groups, okay, all season long, leading the nation, hits per nine, whip, strikeout-to-walk ratio, ERA, second nationally in strikeouts per nine, walk per nine, and strikeouts. The Wake Forest team ERA is sitting at 2.48. 2.48. The next closest is Northeastern at 3.54. I mean, this is just stupid.
Yeah.
Wake Forest, Northeastern, Tennessee, Duke, and Virginia, your top five in team ERA. And Wake Forest has over a full run advantage and head start on the Huskies of Northeastern. Tennessee at 3.76, Duke at 3.80, Virginia at 3.81. But because Clemson, under a new coach, okay, coming in this season, a team that was just trying to make it back to the postseason, the fact that they're in a position now where they control their own fate in such a way that they can be a top eight overall seed if Clemson takes care of business this weekend and at least doesn't go, you know, bow out in such a way that would, you know, diminish their hopes of being a top eight next week in Durham. But absolutely, I think hands down, no question, it's Eric Backich for Coach of the Year in the ACC.
The crazy thing about that ERA that you just mentioned, 2.48, it's now 300th lower than Tennessee's was last year at 2.51. which was the best mark in college baseball since 2017 at Oregon State.
Yeah.
So Wake Forest has now beaten or lowered that mark because they shut out UNCW in the midweek, which, by the way, there were some insane midweek results this past week in the final week of the regular season. Now, there were a lot of games canceled due to rain or mutual agreement between the two schools. We'll get to that in a minute. But Wake Forest went against the top team in the CAA and shut them out in Wilmington after UNCW came to the couch and almost beat them. They came back and almost beat Wake in the last couple innings, but Cam Manassi shut the door and the Deacs won. Wake goes to Wilmington and says, not today, 4-0, good night, program record, 43rd win of the season. And it's not to discount what Tom Walter has done this season in Winston-Salem, because it's nothing short of remarkable. But to your point, they've been building to this point. This was the year, and really some people thought last year was the year, that the Deacs were ready to break that wall and get to Omaha. They didn't do it. This is the year for them to do it. It's just like we thought with East Carolina last year. That was the year for them to do it. Will they do it this year? Maybe. Will the Deacs do it this year? Maybe. We have no idea. But it's going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun to watch. And to go back to that Florida Super when they went there, you're right. The first two games of that series went 11 innings before they lost 3-0 in the finale in Gainesville after hosting a regional here and beating West Virginia twice to go to that Super. So
yes,
the Deacs have experience against high-level teams, big-name teams, West Virginia, Florida, for example, and this isn't going to phase them. this opportunity to be the number one team in the country, like you said, they're not mentioning Omaha. They're just focused on Virginia Tech right now. Then they'll focus on Durham. Then they'll focus on the regional. And when you have the pitching staff that Wake Forest has, you can afford to do that because it says, oh, we're just giving the ball to another horse. That's it. Good.
Wake Forest, one of 90% of all the teams around the country that are beginning their series on Thursday. Really, probably better than 95%. Teams out of the Western Athletic, West Coast Conference, Big West, as I mentioned off the top, even Mountain West Series, Metro Atlantic, just giving you everything. If you're looking, if you're jonesing for college baseball on Sunday, there will be baseball to be found, but everybody else is playing Thursday through Sunday. So to put a bow on Wake Forest, before we move into some of these bonanza results in the midweek, again, we'll look ahead to the games coming up this weekend. Two, a little something with Mark Etheridge had a great piece I did want to touch on in terms of the action clock and yeah. where how we evaluate that clock at this point, those rules at this stage in the season, which apparently rules are being changed midseason.
Didn't see that. Didn't know that was happening.
Did not know until I read the piece. So we will touch on that. But for Wake Forest, getting to 43-8 on the season now, 20-6 is their ACC record. They're bringing into Winston-Salem against Virginia Tech as they host the Hokies this weekend. But it's the eighth 40-win season in program history, second team in program history to reach the mark in the regular season. The last time that they had reached the 40-win plateau was 2002, which, again, part of their achievement from this past weekend when they were in Tallahassee. Wake at 20-6.
Hella nasty.
And I heard as much that actually is pretty true. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised, having driven through the north part of Tallahassee.
I've been in the city.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, they have some phenomenal food spots in Tallahassee. I got to tell you, Momo's Pizza, you ever go to Tallahassee again, Momo's Pizza, they have slices as big as your head. No joke.
Okay. Well, I don't want to hear another bad thing about Tallahassee ever again.
Exactly.
Because food trumps all.
I know. That's why I gave Tallahassee its due. Momo's Pizza is phenomenal.
Ooh, I'm going to make this note. Food plans for the weekend on our way out.
Oh, yeah. We do need to do that.
We need to drop that. Because I actually have some special plans tomorrow, and we got a fun day lined up on Saturday. Maybe others can take note.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, break bread figuratively with us. Or
live life vicariously
Throw on their Speedo in another part of the country and know that your boy is wearing his very own Speedo at that same time at a unmarked location in the greater Winston-Salem, North Carolina area. But Wake Forest, plus 91 run differential through the first nine series of ACC play. Outscoring opponents 175-284, 20-6, winning the first nine series, 20 wins, most in program history in ACC play. And with it being Thursday and these series being Thursday through Saturday, Con, you know what that means. He was reinserted into that game one role a couple of weeks ago when I was at the couch. Today is Rhett Lauder Day.
It is.
It is Rhett Lauder Day.
What a great day.
A tremendous day. Unanimous preseason, All-American, ACC Pitcher of the Year a year ago, likely
the ACC Pitcher of the Year this year, too. I mean,
He's going to repeat, folks.
And he's got the best
news.
Flow in the league.
Best flow in the league. Very upset we're not going to see one particular flow coming up next week in Hoover. More on that coming up.
God, I forgot.
I'm just a tease machine.
I forgot.
Here today. I'm just a teaser.
Yeah, I had forgotten that this happened.
I am such a teaser. Okay, 82.
You just broke my heart all over again.
82 and two-thirds innings, 96 Ks, 62 hits, 16 walks, 14 earned runs. He's blanked a conference opponent four times this season. Miami, Louisville, BC, and Florida State. ACC Pitcher of the Week.
Can we just
times.
Take a moment and read those four teams that he blanked again?
Miami, poor one out. Louisville, poor one out. Boston College, Florida State.
Three of those four teams are college baseball blue bloods, and he blanked them.
Yeah,
and Boston College had the season of their program this
and BC
year.
Relative to their program by far the best season.
Like, and he's just nope, doesn't matter. Blanked them all four of them. Incredible.
Lauder, one of two pitchers, the only one in Power Five with a perfect 11-0. Who is the other one? Because he came out of nowhere. I gotta look this up.
Who's 11-0 on the season?
Yeah, hang on, I got it right here. Wins. Oh no, I just scrolled past it. Come on, don't let me down. NCAA website. Do not
it
let
always,
me down.
It always lets you down.
It just let me down. I got saves. Where's wins?
I can't
victories.
Even find
here it.
It
is. It's under
it's
victories.
What? Who?
Omar Melendez.
Yes,
Omar Melendez.
Alabama State. And Cooper Rawls. Can't forget about him. At Louisiana, at Lafayette, 10-0.
Lafayette. They got Southern Miss this weekend.
Yep. Big series for the Raging Cajuns.
a perfect segue. Oh. Before we talk midweek, yeah. I feel like this is some pretty juicy news. Scott Barry, after 14 seasons as the head coach at Southern Miss, is going to hang it up effective at season's end. He announced his retirement on Tuesday morning. Now, let's reflect a little bit before we give his career numbers and what he's meant to the program and what they're going to do moving forward. They're just going to promote from within. That's what they do. I think they've had 5 coaches in 75
right.
years.
Yeah.
Like something insane. Scott Barry was supposed to be on this program
yes.
today. All right, folks?
Yeah.
I immediately sent an email Sunday after they finished the sweep this past weekend to Jack Duggan, the old left-hander, all right, the SID for Southern Miss, who doubles as a play-by-play guy during overlap season in place of John Cox, the voice of the Golden Eagles, and frequently is providing analysis alongside Coxie on road trips. But Duggan said, yeah, sure, Kyle, we will work to iron out his schedule. Got back to me Sunday night, followed up with him Tuesday morning after I saw the immediate news early in the a.m. that Scott Barry's hanging it up. So we tried, folks.
We
tried.
What? It would have been because we originally tried for Monday to get him Monday and replay it on Tuesday's pod.
Yeah.
How crazy would that have been if we had broken the retirement news to the world? Not really, because this would have been posted Tuesday morning. We would have had to embargo the podcast until this announcement came out. But Barry would have told us probably if we said, hey, well, we won't post this till Tuesday morning after you have broken the news.
I don't know. I don't even think John Cox got that kind of access. So
that would have been crazy if he broke that news to us. Be like, yeah, what's next for you? Be like, well, I'm retiring. What?
Or even if we were able to still finagle and he made time for us after the announcement, we could
right.
have been one of the first people
yeah.
to exclusively get his comments.
He hasn't posted a video.
He hasn't spoke. So
released a statement. That's about it. But anyways, like, here's my thing about the retirement. And before you, I will let you take the lead on lauding his career accomplishments and what he's meant to Southern Miss, because you've been around that program more than I have. How do you inspire a team more than anything else in a current season? Give them something to play for. Well, Southern Miss, who, by the way, is atop the Sun Belt Conference with Coastal Carolina at 20-7 going into the final week of the regular season, now has something to play for even more so than they already did with their motivation from getting to a super and losing to the eventual national champion in Ole Miss. They're playing for their head coach, Scott Barry, who they want to send him out with a trip to Omaha. So, I mean, great timing. Well done by Scott Barry.
Friday night has been dubbed Scott Barry night at
Good.
Pete Taylor Park. So the Miss is going to Omaha, folks. You've heard it here first.
Is that your lock of the weekend?
That is my shirt. Well, no. It might be. I don't know. I'm feeling,
I put out a lock like weeks and months ago that Mizzou was going to Hoover, and they're still having to lock that up. So
they can get swept this weekend and still go.
They could.
As long as Mississippi State doesn't sweep.
Right.
That is the yeah. calculation there yeah. As Mississippi State tries to work their way into the field in Hoover next week. But the Sun Belt Tournament, Mike, which is next week.
Oh.
I mean, that thing is going to determine several different outcomes as it pertains to the postseason picture. But that's not important right now from a Southern Miss perspective. It's Scott Barry, 14 seasons. He's tutored 36 first-team all-conference selections, 517, 271, and 1 over his time with the program. And what he's done from a competitive standpoint, a recruiting standpoint, how he has helped to really refine and enhance and build up the resources and strengthen the support from the top down, not just at the university, but in the community. Southern Miss baseball, I mean, granted, geographically, you're dealt a pretty full deck in terms of people caring about baseball and it being talent rich, right?
Yeah.
If you're not in the SEC, like, you want to be Southern Miss, okay? Southern Miss is that program. I think that's pretty fair to say.
Absolutely.
And in the Deep South, Southern Miss is that program that you aspire to be. They've earned that. Scott Barry has turned the program into such a machine that if you're not going to be playing Southeastern Conference baseball and you want to play baseball year-round with great weather in the Deep South and enjoy the food and the culture and everything that goes along with SEC-type territory, Southern Miss is the place for that. A team that has earned consecutive 40-plus win seasons, okay, more than any other Division I program, with six of those of back-to-back 40-win seasons, 4-time Conference USA Coach of the Year, 5 regular season conference crowns, 4 league tournament titles, 8 NCAA tournament berths, 2 regional hosting opportunities, 1 super regional hosting shot, which came last year when they fell to eventual national champion Ole Miss, and they do have 1 appearance in Omaha. They beat Florida. I think it was 09 in a super regional in Gainesville. It was either 08, 09, or 10. I think 09, I'm right. And they made it to Omaha for the first time. They're getting there for a second time. And I'm pulling on the logic, not just of what Southern Miss has become, okay? But we've seen this before. Mike Martin Sr. at Florida State. Mm-hmm. Did he come out and announce, was that, or did we know during the season that was his last year? I can't recall.
Mike Martin?
Yeah.
No.
We assumed.
Because of the whole Link Jarrett situation, and this was all postseason.
Because they won the Super in Baton Rouge, and it was like, oh my God, Mike Martin's getting back to the plate. He's definitely done once
right.
they won the Super.
Right. We assumed Link Jarrett, once it was announced that he was leaving Notre Dame, would go to Florida State.
Yeah.
That was the assumption. But we didn't know.
But I'm talking about Mike Martin Sr.
Oh.
Remember
his
last year, he got Florida State back to Omaha, and everybody's thinking, I think it was like his 17th appearance. Remember, Florida State has been to Omaha more than any other team without even winning the dang thing. But the legendary fixture at FSU. Now, Scott Perry's only been at Southern Miss 14 seasons. Like, I get that. That's not what Mike Martin put in. It's not the same sort of equity that Martin put in at Florida State before he hung it up. But FSU, in stunning fashion, really, winning their regional, going to Baton Rouge, defeating LSU in a super regional, and getting Mike Martin, the praise and the exit and the curtain call that he deserves, hanging up his career as one of the final eight teams in Omaha.
So Mike Martin Sr. did announce before the 2019 season it would be his final 40th and final season.
Even more impressive.
Yes.
I mean, which obviously that goes without saying the amount
right.
of time he put in there. But
right.
this just, there's a little bit of a Mike Martin vibe
here. You got
my
here. Mike Martins mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not junior.
Right.
Senior.
Yeah, senior. Senior did announce. I just confirmed it.
Okay.
On June 18th, 2018, he announced he would retire following the 2019
season. So he pulled a Mike Krzyzewski.
Yes.
Okay.
He said, give me my farewell tour.
Yeah. This is the last ride. Yeah. Whereas Scott Perry.
The last dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last dance.
Yeah.
Scott Perry is announcing with ahead of the final weekend in the regular season.
I think it's perfect timing.
I think it is, too. One of only four coaches to lead the Golden Eagles since 1959. God, one of four. So the next head coach, okay, the idea or the thought is
promoting their pitching coach, right?
Promoting from within,
yeah.
Ostrander, right?
Yep.
Who would get the nod next. Now, that none of that has been official.
That's just what everyone assumes
it's been,
is going to happen.
It's been yeah. assumed just because that's the way they've operated in the past. Christian, I don't know if it's Ostrander or Ostrander, so apologies, but he's currently the associate head coach. Oh, he's got a nice little flow. He looks like
what's his job when he gets out of coaching?
Oh, man. He looks like Val Kilmer.
Really? I have not looked at his headshot.
Yeah, looks like the Iceman here.
Nice. Let's go. Love
it. Sixth season as the pitching coach.
Oh, wow. He does look like Val Kilmer.
Yeah. I've been told I look like Val Kilmer.
Take off your glasses,
from
sure.
From Tombstone.
If you take your glasses off, yeah, I'd agree. Okay.
That was when I had a mustache. So, yeah, change in the works at Southern Miss, but could this be an added layer of motivation? I certainly think so, to deliver and pay back on everything that Scott Perry has given to this program. So I did find it ironic and poetic, whatever the proper term is, that you and I talked about getting Scott Perry on the show 2 weeks ago, and we planned for this week. And we said as long as they take care of business and win the series. They won the series
they swept.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
I should have sent the email on Saturday. Maybe we could have had something lined up Monday morning already.
Yeah.
But then it would have been stale because he would not have told us that he planned on retiring.
If we had it up Monday morning, he wouldn't have told us.
Yeah, he wouldn't have told us.
If it had been like Monday night and we had prefaced it with, hey, this comes out Tuesday, maybe he would have let it slip. Maybe. We don't know. We have no confirmation of that. We're optimistic that would have happened. We did break news with Brad Bohannon getting fired.
We did. We were on the air for that one 2 weeks ago now. 2 weeks ago right now.
Which Alabama, by the way, 5-2 since Brad Bohannon was dismissed.
Gotcha.
So, wild.
All right, give me some of the midweek results. Let's pivot from Barry.
Well,
we talked about Wake. We talked about my stash. We've been on the air for 30 minutes. No guest. Kazuki Higa is leading the PGA Championship at 300 par as he makes the turn.
Don't know who that is. I think the biggest one, Oregon State losing to Portland?
Yes.
Like, the Beavs were hosting a regional in Corvallis, and then they lose to the Pilots? Oh, I mean, the other ones you got to mention, Campbell. Obviously, big in-state win over ECU, 14-13, Coastal beating UNC. What am I missing? What were the other? There was a couple.
Well, Duke losing 9-5 to Gardner Webb.
Oh yeah, you can't do that. You just get.
I mean, you.
South Carolina.
South Carolina dropping a game to Charlotte.
Yep. Just here's the thing. It's the final week of the regular season, and so many of these teams are playing teams they don't need to be playing in the last time, and they canceled the games. Rightfully so. Good call. The two games that didn't need to be canceled, Campbell ECU, they played that. Coastal UNC, they played that. Georgia was playing Western Carolina this week, started the game, got rain delayed, and they washed it out, said no contest. Shouldn't have even played the game. Pointless. Why is Duke playing Gardner Webb? Duke just fell out of the top eight because they lost to Georgia Tech, who's now surging towards the postseason all of a sudden after winning back-to-back series. And Duke goes and plays Gardner Webb and loses.
Duke is in a funk since
bad
the
game.
Final exam break, since we had Chris Edwards on. Because they didn't have the ACC games.
Yep.
They had a doubleheader scheduled against, what was it, Longwood on a Sunday.
Yeah, and they only played one game.
They only played. They had to come from behind and win that one game. Then you lose
2-3 to Georgia Tech.
2-3 to Georgia Tech at home at the DBAP.
You split a midweek series with Ryder before that.
Yeah,
they lost one of those
games.
That's
the one I'm forgetting.
They lose to Gardner Webb. Like, you're just hurting yourself.
It almost feels like.
This is self-inflicted wounds.
And this isn't the case, but it's like in schedule making, you got to the final after you mapped out your schedule to exam break, and you're like, oh no, we need like a couple more opponents. Like, let's just fill it in. Come on down, you know, Ryder. Come on down, Gardner Webb, and you know the team. It's a psychology. It's a mental thing more than anything, though, in terms of being in that spot. You hit exam break.
They need the Tim Tadlock version of scheduling.
Can you? Yes. Go out to Palo Alto. Just go out to Stanford. You know what, Duke. You're in Miami right now. You're preparing for game one of a massive. The winner of Duke-Miami of that series this weekend will host.
Yeah.
Okay, that is an elimination. Yep. That is a hosting series.
Yep.
Winner of that series. It's in Coral Gables. But, you know, if I'm Duke, I tell Miami thanks but no thanks. I hop on a bus and I go to Palo Alto.
A bus from Miami?
Yes.
More like a boat.
Yeah. Hey, well, that will help, you know, massage your mind.
A bus will not help massage your mind. It will not massage anything because those seats are not comfortable.
They'll be there by Sunday. Stanford's not playing on Sunday. It's perfect. Who's Stanford got this weekend?
Washington State in Pullman.
Stanford will be back from a long bus trip themselves because they ain't flying either. It's going to be a gentleman's pack. Look, we'll make the bus trip from Coral Gables to the farm if you decide not to fly from Pullman back home. And, hey, you know what? Let's just meet somewhere in the middle. Let's meet in Tulsa. I'm not a geography guy.
Sure.
But Tulsa sounds somewhat in the middle.
Kansas, maybe?
Middle America.
Kansas?
Yeah.
Nebraska.
Topeka.
Meet in Omaha.
Topeka. I'm sure. Just go to TD America. Yeah. Charles Schwab, whatever it is. The Schwabby.
Yeah. Stump the Schwab.
HV3's at 100. Where was I going with this?
Anyways, like, why is Duke playing these games?
Yeah, it's dumb. All right,
and South Carolina losing to Charlotte. Like, no point in playing that game. You're so banged up. You are missing position players. You are missing pitchers. You are losing guys left and right, just like Arkansas. RIP Peyton Stovall.
Cancellations.
Yeah.
I ran the numbers.
Okay.
Did you do this?
No.
Okay, good. I didn't want us to double work, and I didn't tell you I was doing this. I'm just proud that I actually did some research.
I assumed you did it, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know
so
why,
many.
But I assumed you did it.
I did it.
Yeah.
All right, guess how many? How many in total?
Like,
how many How many midweek games were canceled this week?
Oh, this week?
Just this week. Just this week.
20.
Double it.
40?
40.
40?
40.
Holy smokes.
I'm going purely off of D1Baseball.com, the score bug, and looking through the entire page and counting
just
every
control
canceled,
find canceled and just
every canceled. I just went top to bottom. 40 cancellations.
Jesus.
Three impacting top 25 teams. Which doesn't
Vanderbilt
seem that bad.
Was one. Who were the other two?
Guess the other top 25.
Vanderbilt was one.
Connecticut.
Oh, UConn and LIU. That's right. Yep.
And then Boston College.
Boston.
BC
I didn't know
Ed
BC
Maine.
Canceled.
BC at Maine.
Okay. There we go.
So Vanderbilt, Connecticut, and Boston College were the three top 25 teams to cancel.
Okay. I mean, those games don't need to be played.
How many I got two
especially
more.
Especially because BC just came off playing Villanova, a Big East team that was unnecessary. They won both games, so good for them. But
two more questions. in regards to the cancellations. One, I think, is super easy. We'll start with the more difficult. How many conferences did not feature any cancellations? There was not a single cancellation in how many different conferences?
This week?
This week. I mean, so we know the SEC is not one of those.
Yeah, it's got to be a small
number.
We know the
ACC is not. We know the Big East is not, based on the three top 25 teams.
Yeah.
We got, what, 32 conferences? 31? By the way, the Ivy League tournament is this weekend.
Yep.
I don't know if you put it on the lineup card. I didn't look ahead. So there's your love for the Ivy League.
I don't know, five?
Nine.
Okay.
Which I think was a little bit higher.
I thought
than what I thought.
Smaller than that.
Yeah. Big West, Colonial, Horizon, Metro Atlantic, MAC, so both the MAC
and the
MAC, the Ben American, Mountain West, Northeast, Southland, and the Summit League.
Okay.
So those are your nine leagues that did not have a cancellation.
And the Big West makes sense, because especially because there's no conference tournament. They're playing two more weekends.
Yeah. The conference with the most cancellations?
The SEC?
Yes.
Yeah.
How many?
Let's see.
One in the top 25, so how many more?
Four?
Six.
Six? Who'd I miss?
SEC teams to cancel on Tuesday.
Vandy?
Georgia and Western Carolina. I mean, they started.
Okay, no contest. I missed Georgia.
Yeah.
All right.
Missouri and Indiana State.
Oh, right.
Did we talk about that on Tuesday or did we talk about it off air?
I don't think we brought it up on
air. I don't know if it was on the pod. That would have been a really cool
I was looking forward to that one.
And Missouri needed that.
Yeah. Also, this weekend, Indiana State, Missouri State, MVC, powerhouse battle.
My surefire lock might come out of that series.
All right.
I knew you would jog my memory.
Yeah.
Mississippi State, North Alabama, Ole Miss, Austin Peay, which we had talked about extensively on Tuesday, and then Auburn, Jacksonville State, who had just canceled prior to us recording Monday night.
Right. I was going to say Arkansas didn't cancel.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
40 cancellations, three in the top 25. Nine leagues didn't have a single cancellation. The SEC had the most with six. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
That's your cancellation update.
I mean, it makes sense. Why not? Why, if you're fighting for a postseason spot, you don't need to play that game. Just plain and simple. If you win, doesn't help you. If it loses, it really hurts you.
Let's talk action rules.
Okay.
Mark Etheridge had this piece, SEC Extra, D1Baseball.com. Can't wait to catch up with Mark. And Joe Healy, Monday, Brock's Gap Brewing.
Let's go.
Hitting the road, first thing Monday, SEC Tournament baseball coverage all week long.
Do we know what time the event starts?
On the Varsity app? No, I have no idea.
I don't either. I think it's at 7.
I hope so.
Maybe.
So we can get there by 5 to,
set
up their equipment. But yeah, Mark and Joe, find them on Twitter. Go to D1Baseball.com for more information. Buy a ticket. Okay, this is a ticketed event. You get a beer.
$15.
It's $15. You get a beer. Part of the cost to get in is going to go towards a terrific organization that helps us support autism, which I know is something near and dear to Mark Etheridge's heart. So SEC Extra live Highway to Hoover podcast recording going on Monday. Con and I will be there.
7 p.m.
Monday night, 7 p.m. Brock's Gap Brewing. Central. Okay. Just outside the Hoover Met. So Con and I and Phil Brame, Tim Bickford are hitting the road on Monday. Varsity Network app. Download it. Have it on your phone. Have it ready. Four games Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. A couple of semis on Saturday and the championship game on Sunday. Cannot wait for that. So Etheridge wrote a piece that released this week that had comments from, you know, Tim Corbin, Jim Schlossnagel, and I think even Tony Vitello was quoted in this one. And, you know, just talking about, and a lot of this is reiterating where we're at with the game. The games are quicker. They're so much faster that we can quantify, right? It's 12 minutes. 12-minute difference on average, which isn't huge, but it is same time.
Yeah.
It's enough. You know, things are fast. And it's no surprise that, you know, Tim Corbin is on record saying he loves it. Because Vanderbilt has always worked fast, you know, so it works in their favor.
Andrew Allegretta mentioned that. He was like, there's no big adjustment when we had him on the podcast. There was no huge adjustment for Vandy's players going into this season because they always work quickly.
And, again, it's a 20-second pitch clock. The Etheridge had indicated the batter was supposed to be in the box at 5 seconds.
I thought it was earlier. I thought it was 9.
I think it is.
Okay.
I think it is.
I thought batter in by 9.
Because
pitcher has all 20 to throw.
Yes.
Batter needs to be in the box by 9
because
seconds.
But, folks, it's okay because this speaks to the larger issue.
Yes.
There's confusion. There's inconsistencies. Whether it's the umpire, you know, making the call appropriately or consistently on on the lack of or the inability to start your motion on time or to get in the box on time or the clock operator starting the clock on time. The umpires have so many things that they already got to worry about in terms of striker ball, outer safe.
Fair or foul.
Fair or foul. And now we're putting clock management into the umpire's hands, right? Like, it's a lot. And it was a big adjustment period earlier. There was a lot more inconsistencies early on. We certainly have gotten better, such as life. You know, the more you do it, the more efficient you become. But before I get to what Jim Schlossnagel pointed out in terms of a midseason change that just blows my mind, it's the first I've ever read about it, I love the quote from Tony Vitello in this piece. The cat and mouse, and this is him supporting the action clock too. The cat and mouse doesn't interest me, Vitello said. So I like when a batter stands in the box, he's got his hands on the bat, and the pitcher gets his sign, and let's find out who's better.
Ooh, that's God. Peak Vitello.
God, it gets me
that's,
fired
That's
up.
Just peak Tony Vitello. Yeah. Like, we interacted with him last year in Hoover. We've seen his interactions over the last couple of years as Tennessee's risen to prominence, you know, especially last season. And that's who he is. That's his attitude that he takes to everything that he does in baseball and in life. Like, I mean, that's not surprising at all that he would say that.
So Jim Schlossnagel said, the Texas A&M head coach, that before the series with Arkansas, it was about 30 minutes before the game. So at least it wasn't when they were going over the ground rules. But 30 minutes before the game, might as well have been.
Mm-hmm.
Umpires tell DVH and Schloss that, hey, look, we've got to change to, you know, because the amount of pickoffs have been limited. You can only step off and fake a throw one time per batter mm-hmm. who's up.
Yep. To reset the clock. And avoid a violation.
That's the only, like, rule or implementation in regards to, like, a base runner, I think, correct?
Yeah, the only rules with base runners is you can step off or throw over one time to reset the clock.
Yes.
After that, if you do that, the clock's going. Like, if you step off, you got to get right back on and throw.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, Schloss and DVH were told that when the pitcher is looking to pick off or making an attempt on a runner at second base, mm-hmm. okay, you had to actually, and the language, again, is so fuzzy.
So vague.
You had to actually throw at the position player.
Right.
You couldn't step, because too many times you'll see it, you know, because you don't want a pitcher to stop in their motion, you don't want them to get hurt. They'll step off, they'll do a spin move or whatever, and they'll kind of do a lackadaisical little pop throw, like just a little bloop to get it over the shortstop or second baseman to keep the base runner honest at second. And it's because, you know, maybe they turn around so aggressively and quickly, but then, you know, the runner's back, but they're not trying to stop their motion, so they just lob it over. Well, the rule changed before the Texas A&M and Arkansas game. Schloss and DVH were told, look, a pitcher can no longer just bloop a ball to the middle infielder trying to keep a guy honest at second base. He's got to make a throw with intent, and the vague language was he has to throw it. He can't bloop it.
Right.
And it's like, what are we doing?
Isn't a bloop a throw?
Yeah, like this is
And
this
if,
is pity
if he
patty.
Does it now, they get to call – the umpire has the discretion to call a ball if he does it.
And it's just another one of those judgment calls.
Yeah, which, like, what? No umpire is going to call that. How do you make the decision there? And if you do – the coach is going to get upset and come out, and we're going to have a delay in the game. It's going to slow the game down if they call that ever. Also, pitchers use that as a way to bait base runners off the base because they stop and they bloop it, hoping the base runner will take off.
Sure, yeah.
And then the shortstop will catch it and throw it to third and get him out. Now that takes away an element of advantage for the pitcher. It's more advantage base runner, which – does that quicken the game a little bit by allowing base runners an easier opportunity to steal because you know if they're turning around, they're whipping it back? I don't know. And they can only do it once. So once they've done it once, you know they're not going to do it again. It seems like it's leaning more advantage base runner.
And DVH was quoted too saying, look, you know, we get video. They got a 45-minute video like explaining.
Right.
I think it was that specific change
yeah.
at one point. You can't just bloop it or it's a ball and it's a judgment call, DVH has said. Etheridge writes, that move, courtesy pickoff attempt, designed to reset the pitch clock instead of holding a runner, became the latest tweak right before Arkansas hosted A&M on April 27th. Schloss went as far as to say, that's what I'm talking about with, like, no notice. He's like, we had a rule change prior to the weekend. 30 minutes before the game, umpires walked over to Dave and to me, and they said there had been a change. 30 minutes before the game, and that's how we hear it. Not from the NCAA or the ABCA, nobody. You know, so the implementation of this is where – You know, Schloss is right. Like, and he's been kind of on this since the beginning of the year. He's been caught on video in terms of his reaction, you know, to some of these action clock violations and rule implementations. And he continues to stress that point in this piece with Etheridge, where he says, look, it's the rollout. It's the application. It's the process. Like, in theory, all of this is great. I understand what we're doing. But, again, we don't have a preseason. You know, now we're 50 games in, but, you know, we didn't have a preseason. There wasn't enough of a transitional period to build up a great understanding of how to do this, you know. And that's – he can continue to play that card when these tweaks are coming in and throwing things off. So,
and coming in 30 minutes before a game. Like, you have to allow an opportunity for people to adjust. And you mentioned no preseason. There was no opportunity to adjust for that. And you tell them 30 minutes before a series? Well, you can't. Your pitcher's already deep in his warm-up. You can't just walk out to the bullpen and say, hey, guys, by the way, don't do that anymore, starting right now.
Yeah,
it's in their head already. It's ingrained. You need time to adjust to these rules. This should have been a rule that would be implemented for the next season. Also, Schloss brought up another great point about the pitch clocks.
The back order.
Yeah,
that's
the back order.
Yeah.
And the fact that
the infrastructure, these clocks are on back order because everybody wants them.
You need them.
So not everybody can put them in the proper places.
Right. The rule is supposed to be to have a pitch clock on the scoreboard and behind the plate so that the pitcher, the batter, the umpire, the coaches, everyone can see it at all times.
What'd you say there? The rule.
The
Yet
rule.
These rules aren't the rule. Being even implemented.
Because they can't be. Because you
properly.
Can't get the clock.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly, if I'm
so at
a,
A&M, it's only in the outfield. Like,
right.
If you have a digital scoreboard,
yeah.
It's easy because you can create in the bottom corner.
Right. If I'm a team, I just go to our basketball arena, get one of those on the floor shot clocks, and plug it in behind the plate because that's all I have to do.
Yeah.
Genius. I can't get a pitch clock. But yeah, it's one of those things where you're just kind of sitting there going, well, okay, you want us to do this, but you didn't give us enough time to adjust to this or tell us we need this or assist us in getting the necessary equipment and technology to implement these rules that you have put on us for this year. So it's all about adjusting, right? And there's never been any time to adjust to what's going on right now. And it'll all be fixed by next year, probably, you think, because teams will have a full offseason to figure out if they can't get the necessary mechanism, how to get a holdover or a placeholder for that clock behind the plate. But Schloss is absolutely right. This was kind of just thrown into the fire and said, figure it out.
Yeah.
And there was no, you know, assistance given or leeway given. That was one of the things that I think we brought up early in the season about the action clock that I think should have been implemented as these teams were getting used to it. Doesn't need to be done now, but a warning maybe the first time it's violated in February because
sure.
These pitchers and hitters are not used to this. It's new.
Yeah.
Just say, hey,
and maybe
you know,
that
hey,
is...
you did it once, that's it. Warning both teams, that's it. It's like when you hit a batter the first time. They don't throw you out of the game. They say, warning. Warning, don't do it again.
Maybe this is a utopian view of it, but I'd like to think that there are some warnings that we just don't know and can't tell about.
Maybe.
You know, like maybe the umpire under his breath, like, hey, like I could have called it there, like get in
maybe.
A second earlier, you know. Maybe,
maybe.
There was a little bit of a coaxing. I don't know.
But the umpires are also inconsistent calling the pitch clock violation.
Sure.
Like, do we need a buzzer on the umpire's belt that says when it gets under 9 seconds, bzzz. Like, you know, with those robo-umps they've been testing out at the Atlantic League and AAA where they buzzes whether it's a ball or a strike? Do we need to do that?
Are you wanting to put a shock collar on the blue?
Yeah.
You want to treat him like a dog?
Well, be honest.
Like he's going outside the fence line?
It'd be on his waist.
You're trying to geo-fence the umpire.
This would be like his phone vibrating. Not a shock collar, but...
Dude, you're trying to put shock collars on back order.
Listen... If we need it to be – all we ask for from umpires, referees, whatever, any sport, is to be consistent. Even if your strike zone is bad, call the pitches the same way throughout the entire game. Don't change your zone. This would help with that. I'm just saying. Putting it out there.
Final thing on this piece, and then we can move on to the projections.
Yeah.
That will lead us into the weekend lineup card before our PGA Championship picks. Tim Corbin – on the action clock, following up what Vitello had said about the cat and mouse game and, you know, let's just see who's better. Pitcher's ready to go. Hitter's ready to hit. Corbin said, just get in the box and play ball. It brings harmony to the game. I think that's a great word, harmony.
Yeah. It's a great equalizer.
It is.
Yeah.
12 minutes. Average game time of 2 hours and 50 minutes entering the final weekend of the regular season, down from 302 a year ago. While we're talking about year over year, we should jump to this before we go over the projections. The home run totals.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a great note that was put out there by our friends at D1 Baseball over this past week.
Yeah, and Kendall Rogers, he had credited exactly where he had gotten the information from. I actually had tweeted out earlier, and then you had sent it to me.
Was it plus 2,000?
It's more than 2,000. I'm going to get the exact numbers up, but more than 2,000 home runs have been hit at this point in the year, entering weekend 14 versus a year ago in 2022.
We were talking about how much more home runs were hit last year at this time. We were having this exact same conversation. Especially with Tennessee hitting 158.
Like, yeah, we really were. Yeah. And then per game, 0.25 more per game. So here's the totals. 2023 home run total, 16. This is entering the week. Mm-hmm. 16,649.
Wow.
2.25 per game. Last year, 14,452. So by my math, that is... Oh, you don't want me to do math.
No, I don't.
You don't want me
2,000 around.
Yeah, it's more than 2,000.
Yeah.
1.99 per game. And then if you go back even a year further, so in 2 years, so the jump last year was even more substantial.
It's gargantuan, yeah.
That was nearly 4,000. It was like 3,700 more home runs from 2021 to 22.
Yeah, we talked about the BB Corps bats and all that stuff, and that making a huge change.
10,744 to 14,452 from 01, coming off the COVID year, to 22. So just insane. We're at 2.25 per game and 16,649 home runs. That's entering the week. Just incredible. Kendall Rogers had that tweet out, but to... crediting lead analyst developer 643 charts, Luke Smales, as well as...
Have you been on that website? I've never been on that website.
No, I haven't. Let me pull it up. 643 charts. I'm going to add it to my college baseball list.
Yeah.
So I don't forget.
I just... Powerful insights, innovative designs, unmatched customer service. We need to be a client.
It's okay. I might be able to pick something up off their tweets. I ain't worried about it. Do I look like client material?
Maybe.
I am. Very much so.
We need to be a client to go on their website and get stuff.
Okay. Yeah. All right, sign up, man.
Wonder how much it costs.
Expensive.
let me dial up.
Get out your corporate Amex there, champ.
You got one too, guy.
Yeah, but I pay for SEC Extra.
That's true. Till June. We got to remember to cancel it, unfortunately.
All right, they're listening. Field of 64 projections. What is the lead item out of this week? I'll give you 1 through 16. 1 through 8 was Wake. Arkansas up to number 2. Florida at 3. LSU 4. Stanford at 5. Mm-hmm. And I think primarily, again, that's a strength of schedule thing. Like they
it has
haven't,
to be.
They don't have any – they haven't played anybody inside the top 25
of
winning. RPI. They're just winning. So yeah. while they're third nationally, they're fifth in the projections because the committee's going to ding them for not playing anybody. Sorry, sure. Pac-12. Yeah. So Wake, Arkansas, Florida, LSU, Stanford, West Virginia at 6, Clemson at 7, Vanderbilt at 8, and then Virginia at 10, Kentucky, South Carolina, Coastal Carolina, Miami, OK State, Duke, and Oregon State. If we were to project this today after the Oregon State loss to Portland, that would probably bump the Beavs out. I think they should. But, maybe don't be too as harsh on that. But it's going to play out anyways this weekend because they're playing Western Carolina. So,
cancel that series.
Oh, my God.
It's not worth it.
I just found it interesting. Miami and Duke are both in there right now, but I think only one of them is.
Yeah, whoever loses that series will not host.
Yeah.
Unless the other one wins the ACC tournament. That's the only way they change that.
And the other thing is Boston College is gone. UConn is not projected.
That's the big headline. Yeah. Northeast Regional, gone.
No more.
Boo. I wanted it. I wanted it for Brighton. I wanted it for Storrs. Boo. I don't like that. I get it. BC played out of conference this past weekend against Villanova. They won the games, but that still hurts. UConn still leading the Big East, by the way, half game over Xavier. So it's a strength schedule thing. I understand. Some teams are playing better. OK State, I mentioned it last week that they needed to win their series for me to believe them as a top 16 host. They did it. They beat 2-3 over Kansas State. So I believe in them as a top 16 host now. I'm a man of my word. I say it on the air. But, I mean, West Virginia still got that stranglehold over the Big 12 Conference. One win this weekend against Texas gives them a share of the regular season title. Two wins, or one win and an OK State loss, West Virginia wins outright the Big 12 title.
It's crazy to me that OK State is still in this position.
I know. They're two games back. But West Virginia has the tiebreak because they beat them in Stillwater.
Yeah, repeat and what you Texas, just said. Magic number's one.
Magic number's two.
Two.
Okay. One for a share. Two of outright. Okay. Yeah. But the crazy thing is Texas is still technically in the race. If Texas sweeps West Virginia and OK State doesn't win their series, Texas wins the title. It's wild. But we'll see. I don't think West Virginia gets swept this weekend. I don't see it happening.
Multiple bids. SEC with 10 as Georgia dropped out. ACC with 8. Big 12 with 7 of 9. With Oklahoma and TCU sneaking in. Pac-12 next up with 6. Sun Belt, Big West, Big 10 each have 3.
Mm-hmm.
Good on Big West.
For now.
For now, yeah. Colonial, only other league with multiple bids. Good to see in Northeastern and UNC Wilmington.
I still think the CAA can get another one in there. Like Elon could get in. Or College of Charleston could get in. I still think that could happen, and I think that would take one away from the Big West.
Well, 3 weeks ago, we were considering William & Mary even as
right,
one of those
but
teams,
I don't think that's going to happen anymore. No. I think the Big West and CAA could swap and go 3-2, CAA, Big West, too, because the Big West cannibalized themselves last weekend,
yeah,
and none of them play each other this weekend.
I like that. I think so, the Big West. I think it's more likely the Big West goes 2.
Yeah, it's CAA Cal State Fullerton and somebody else,
yeah,
probably UCSB. I'd guess. The Gauchos?
Cal State Fullerton dropped 2 straight
series. 6 in a row. Yeah. Yeah. So they got to right the ship, but they're still the favorite.
UC Irvine, Oklahoma, Arizona State, TCU, last four in. Texas State, Georgia Tech, Rutgers, Louisiana. They are the first four out. And, yeah, really, I think the best way to kind of pick this apart is to kind of fuse it with our lineup card and look ahead to the week and how these projections might be impacted with some of the games on tap. So,
By the way, the Winston-Salem regional now, because the Northeast regional has been disbanded, has Maine, UConn, and UC Irvine. Terrible travel for anybody not named Wake Forest.
Holy smokes.
Do you see that? Like, yeah. Stupid.
Can Maine, like, meet up with UConn?
And just travel together?
And instead of a bus, just get on a train. Can they rent a train?
Why would they not fly?
Because I don't want anyone to fly.
Oh, okay.
I want everyone to just have the most...
All right.
Adventurous,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I don't want it to be dull.
Okay.
Like, let's.
Okay.
Let's make
By the way, the
time.
Fayetteville and the Stillwater regionals continue to be just phenomenal. Arkansas, Little Rock, Texas, and Oral Roberts in Fayetteville. Oklahoma State, Sam Houston, Ballast Baptist, and Texas A&M in Stillwater. Like, why are those two the hotbeds of the regionals every single week? It's amazing. Like, the offense in those two regionals is going to be insane. Just insane. And then you got Florida Gulf Coast staying in Coral Gables. Put them back in Gainesville. I want to see Florida versus Florida Gulf Coast in home runs. Just let it happen, please.
Florida Gulf Coast has been overtaken by Lipscomb in the A-Sun.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Lipscomb.
Oh, my.
Who beat Arkansas in their final midweek of the year 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Lipscomb is now leading the A-Sun. So Florida Gulf Coast in a little bit of trouble. But you're right. Fayetteville and Stillwater, my goodness. You talk about the entertainment value just through the roof.
Also, bad news for West Virginia. Tennessee is now projected to be the 2 seed in that Morgantown regional.
That's not good.
No, that's bad news.
That is very bad news. Let's talk about Arkansas because they've got Vanderbilt on the road
this weekend. Yeah. That series is just injury central.
It is. We do know Patrick Riley is going to take the ball night one for Vandy.
Yep.
Futrell is going to go game two.
Yep. And then game three, Johnny Holstaff.
Carter Holden might not return this year at all. And Hunter Owen is unlikely. 50-50, I think, was
for the weekend.
For the weekend.
Which, if I'm Vandy, keep him out.
Yeah.
If you don't have Holton, if you're not going to have Holton for Hoover, keep Owen on the schneid.
Piece it together.
Yeah.
Piece
let him. Together. Let him. You have Riley and Futrell. Game three, let it be what it is. You get one of the first two, game three doesn't matter to me.
And Dave Van Horn talked about it this week in his availability with the media. And he made the comment, look, this is what all the teams are doing, you know, just kind of stating the obvious, but in case you're unaware of how these weeks work prior to a conference tournament, like, you are looking ahead. Like, you are very much looking ahead.
Yeah, you only have 3 days rest.
And you're trying to preserve, okay, and try to map out, okay, the most desirable scenarios, but certainly the train wreck scenario where you are going to need to use a dozen dudes, for example. Mm-hmm. And, like, you need to preserve innings. Like, Hunter Holland, what he did last week on Sunday, going nine
not
innings,
happening again.
That is not happening this week. Mm-hmm. He might throw three innings, and it could be three innings of perfect ball, and he's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Especially considering what else is going on around the league. Arkansas is a full game lead on Florida in the SEC for the number one overall seed in the SEC tournament. What difference is there really from one or two, depending on what time of the day you're playing at?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you've got a chance to win the league outright the regular season, especially with everything Arkansas has had to endure this season in terms of the adversity coming along with the injuries, and there's another one, Arkansas might go for the jugular and feel a little bit of extra motivation, but they're not going to do it at the expense of stretching Brady Tigert out more than 60 pitches.
No.
Okay? They've been extending him each
week.
Same
with Hagen Smith.
Same with Hagen Smith. But with Tigert, you know, his pitch limit was 40. He started the middle game last week, went 37. You know, that's going to be ticked up. Dave Van Horn has admitted as much. And since Hunter Holland moved to the third day, you know, that's worked well with having Hagen Smith go in game one. And he's been phenomenal. And then you got Tigert and Will McIntyre in game two. And it was the freshman, Gage Wood, who came in relief of Hagen Smith on Friday. Arkansas only used five pitchers last week, so they're sitting probably more pretty, or maybe as pretty as
they're
a Florida,
yeah.
You know, coming out of last weekend. They are fresh this week, beyond the injuries
that they
do. And
they want to keep those starters fresh.
They want it. They want that plan to remain in place and to preserve and maintain the health of those guys as much as possible. The Vanderbilt series only matters so much as they're looking ahead big picture. So,
yeah.
Sure, they want to win. They want to go out and win every single game and compete. But, you know, pressing all the right buttons in ways that somebody like Jay Johnson hasn't been doing for LSU, you know, here
well,
recently.
He doesn't have anybody to use.
Yeah, he really doesn't. But I feel really good about Arkansas's ability, especially when you look at the other side and Vanderbilt and the pitching issues that they have. They also are piecing it together. That's mm-hmm. the story here. They've released two starters. DVH has only released the one in Hagen Smith starting on Friday night or Thursday as we come to you. So he can go any number of ways, especially because not that many guys pitched. But another injury for Arkansas and seeing what this – in Peyton Stovall, he's out for the year, torn labrum. He's been dealing with arm soreness since really DVH thinks it was 6 weeks ago that he heard it swinging, okay, not even throwing, and kind of tried to play through the pain. This was in the beginning of April. It's been like a six-week thing. He came back, tried to come back against Texas A&M, played maybe one game that series and has been out the last couple of weeks, and they decided to shut him down. But Peyton Holt has been masterful, filling in at second base. Bottom of the order production, I think it was something like 8 of 15 in game three in the rubber game against South Carolina.
Amazing.
For the final four guys in the order for Arkansas this past weekend. And Peyton Holt was one of those. He went 6 of 10 on the weekend against South Carolina, three-hit day on Sunday. Two doubles, four runs on the weekend. He has started 12 games, played in just 23. Spent 3 years at Crowder College, 333 hitter, 10 RBIs, 16 runs, even has three stolen bases and just 48 at-bats. It's quite the luxury. We used that word at one other point on this podcast this year with LSU. And, yeah, it's a great luxury offensively and defensively at that point for the Tigers. We certainly weren't talking about their pitching. But it's a great luxury when you have a guy, a leader like Peyton Stovall, who can go out, another injury, and it's like, damn, Arkansas can't catch a break. But Peyton Holt can step in, and you're losing at this point. You know, again, can he sustain it, but next to nothing.
And you're probably getting Jared Wagner back.
Yes, he is. I listened to DVH's presser last night. I was trying to peel through, pull some quotables for SEC tournament production, since those are one of the networks, the Arkansas network that I'm responsible for. And DVH was asked the question. I wish we had it readily where I can play because it was funny. One of the reporters asked, Dave, do you expect Jared Wagner will he play this weekend, or are you saving him until Hoover? And DVH was like, yes, he's playing. He's playing this weekend. So that'll be another boost for this offense. A guy like Wagner, who was raking incredibly early in the year, another plus 300 hitter, double-digit home runs, massive RBI guy, transfer from Creighton, just going to provide another jolt and boost to this lineup. So Arkansas, while they lose another guy, they get stronger, or at least they're able to replace them. And Peyton Holt has been a godsend for Arkansas in a lot of ways. So the
That old phrase, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger."
Yeah, and they have been the epitome of just a MASH unit of overcoming, of just finding a way, and they're ranked second nationally. I mean, it's unreal what Arkansas has been able to accomplish this year. So, but Arkansas and Vanderbilt is, for me, the most intriguing seed. Because, again, Vanderbilt's trying to secure a top eight seed.
Mm-hmm. They need this series more than Arkansas does.
They do.
They really do.
They do.
Winning the regular season in the SEC is great, but winning in Hoover means more. It really does. So for Arkansas, you can be a little bit more, you can have a little bit more leeway with the way you manage this series in Nashville this weekend. Vanderbilt needs to win this series in the world, because they've lost back-to-back series now too. They just got swept by Florida after losing 2 of 3 to Alabama in the wake of Brad Bohannon getting canned. So Vandy really needs this series.
Arkansas 38-13, 19-8 in the SEC, a chance to get to 40 wins in the regular season. Vanderbilt 35-16, 17-10 in the SEC. Hogs looking to clinch the program's 4th overall conference championship. So that's what I'm most interested in. Tom Harden, Chris Burke will have the TV call. There's got to be an SEC game on ESPN tonight, is there not? SEC Network for game one for this one.
Is it LSU and Georgia? Or Florida and Kentucky?
Could be. I'll have to look at the programming schedule while you filibuster with some of the other notables.
So, I mean, there's a whole host that we can talk about, but I'll get into the ones that I kind of detailed for you. Wake Forest and Virginia Tech, we've talked about. Hokies are right now out of the field of 64, but the way to get back in, defeat the Deacs in a series. They haven't lost a series all year. In Winston-Salem, they've lost twice, I think, this season. So, you know, tough road for Virginia Tech, but if they do it, they'll put themselves back in the field for sure. You got Florida at Kentucky. Huge series for Florida coming off the sweep of Vanderbilt. Kentucky trying to go into Hoover on the right foot. We know what Nick Mangione's team can do in Hoover. They surprised everybody last year by reaching the semifinals. LSU at Georgia. Tigers have lost back-to-back series. Georgia, of course, just dropped out of the field of 64, so both teams need this win in different ways. LSU is going to be a top eight national seed. Georgia needs to win at least a game to put themselves back in the conversation for being in the field. West Virginia, Texas, we talked about that. West Virginia looking to clinch their first Big 12 regular season title in baseball ever. One of the mid-major series, number 8, Coastal Carolina and Marshall. Coastal tied with Southern Miss for the top spot in the Sun Belt, each of them at 20-7, though Coastal has the tiebreaker as they've won 2 of 3. Number 9, UConn at Creighton, with the Huskies holding a half-game lead over Xavier in the Big East as UConn wants to get back into the hosting picture. Number 11, Miami. Number 16, Duke. We already, pontificated on the fact that that one's going to be a host decider amongst the top 16. Number 13, South Carolina is hosting 18th-rated Tennessee. Again, one that could decide whether Tennessee gets back into the hosting side of things. And honestly, if you're any team not named Tennessee, you want Tennessee to win that series because you don't want them to be a number 2 seed in your regional, a la where they are in West Virginia right now. That's the scariest 2 seed of all 2 seeds. No question about it. And then number 20, Maryland at Penn State. Indiana and Maryland are tied atop the Big Ten standings at 15-6. But remember, Maryland went into Bloomington, swept Indiana. So the Terps have the tiebreaker. But they're in Happy Valley this weekend against Penn State. Big series for Maryland. They win 2 out of 3. They win the title, most likely.
There's a lot. There's a lot to digest and keep up with this weekend. Tournament seedings on the line. Those tournament brackets will be finalized late Saturday night.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about them on Sunday. We're going to podcast on Sunday.
Audio only.
Audio only.
Yep.
As efficiently, effectively as we can to give you all the notables and what is most front-burning for us as we enter conference championship week. And then we're on the road on Monday. I don't see why we can't just release it Monday morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll probably have that to your feed on Monday morning. Michael Serber will do his best with that. At @L_Serberino is how you can find him. At Kyle Shass, at SportsCon4, if you want to follow us all week in Hoover. At CS Now Tweets. Again, the Varsity Network app, you want to make sure you download that. Anything else that I don't have anything to add to the lineup card. I guess a surefire lock, right?
Oh, Indiana State, Missouri State.
I'm going with Missouri State.
Oh, 2 of 3.
Yes.
In Terre Haute.
I'm going with the Bears.
Okay.
On the road. I mean, It's kind of a homer pick.
Which, by
pick,
the way,
I saw
Indiana State is hosting the Missouri Valley Conference tournament in Terre Haute this year, too. So, big chance for the Sycamores to lock up a host seed if they beat Missouri State this weekend and win the MVC. They could move back into the field of 16 to host, which they were in for 1 week. But there's been too many other Power 5 teams that have pushed their way back into the field that Indiana State has unfortunately gotten the raw end of the stick.
Yeah, seeing the Bears in person against ECU, I mean, I knew they were explosive. Like, they're a very offensive team. Mm-hmm. They lead the Valley in doubles, home run, slugging, top 50 nationally in all three categories, 4.14 extra base hits per contest. Like, they can hit. They own the all-time series with Indiana State, but playing on their turf, they don't even need to travel and come back then. Yeah. They're just staying in Terre Haute, right?
Yeah, like, why would you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is for the Missouri Valley Conference regular season title this weekend. It is on the line for Missouri State and for Indiana State. And so this is a legacy pick for me. Again, a homer pick in a way because I saw them, you know, against ECU and Greenville this year. But Keith Gutton, man, a guy that's been doing it forever at Missouri State, like one of college baseball's all-time good guys who has just been there forever. I want to say he's at 40 years. He's spent the past 40 years at Missouri State in Springfield. So, goodness. I mean, he's been there a long, long time. Entered the year third among Division I head coaches, 16th overall in career victories with 1,340. That was prior to the start of the year. So I think his boys are going to be ready, Road Warriors, this weekend. I'm going with Missouri State, the fighting Ryan Howards of Missouri State are going to win a series down in Terre Haute. Bears. Duh, Bears.
You just love the Bears.
2 out of 3.
All right.
2 out of 3 for the fighting Ryan Howards.
There it is.
There it is.
The final regular season lock.
By the way, Terre Haute, terrible city.
Oh.
I mean, it's typical.
I've never been.
Middle America, small town. I've been there a couple times with Western Illinois, who conference realignment. Everybody's talking about the Magnificent
the
Seven, okay? Yeah. And the ACC schools that are scheming to leave, which
I think is a whole bunch of malarkey.
Yeah, it's been smoothed over since in the middle of the week with the ACC spring meetings. But NC State, UNC, Virginia Tech, Virginia, Miami, Clemson, Florida State, these schools are all talk to each other, right, about trying to find a way or investigate how they can leave the ACC and get out of their grant of rights early that is tethered to the ACC network through 2036. I don't care about any of that. I care about my alma mater waving the white flag and deciding, hey, we suck, and we have no idea how to compete, okay, in the highest of levels for FCS football.
Oh,
you're in the same league that crowns the national champion 99% of the time, and you're going to be like, thanks but no thanks. We're sick of just getting pummeled and beaten and embarrassed, and we're going to go join a group of schools in the Ohio Valley Conference that, oh, we think are more geographically and financially aligned with our values. Sure, that might be all fine and dandy, but you know what it also means? You're soft and you're quitters, and you can't step up your game, and I am embarrassed to be an alumnus.
Oh,
I really am. I can't get over it.
I can't get over it.
Although it is very true that Western leaving for the OVC is a very, from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah. Competitive, financial, geographical, it hits all the notes.
It makes sense. But, man, the fall from grace from when I was there and even before as a founding charter member of the then Gateway Football Conference turned Missouri Valley Football Conference and the old MidCon Conference turned Summit League. That conference has just changed so much, losing teams like Oakland and IUPUI and IPFW, and you know, you don't have all those same schools, so I get it in a way. But Illinois State and Southern Illinois aren't leaving.
Mm-mm.
Said you want to go play Eastern Illinois every year. Fuck.
Programming note:
yes.
Only one podcast next week because we'll be in Hoover.
Yes.
So if you expect a podcast on Thursday, you're not getting one. Sorry. We'll be back to two podcasts the week after, leading into Regional Week, which we're still working on stuff for Regional Weekend. But we'll probably tell you about that the week of regionals because we like to keep things under wraps. You mentioned, listen to us on the Varsity. Us, Tim Bickford, Phil Brame, all week in Hoover. And folks going to Durham, the ACC tournament. Mike Coulter, Gabe Genovese, Dan Kortz, Rob Joyce, Luke Nadkarni will be the five gentlemen gracing your ear holes with ACC tournament coverage at the DBAP. So you can listen to them on the Varsity Network app as well.
Beautiful.
PGA Championship picks.
Let's do it and get out of here.
Who you got?
I can't go Jason Day because nobody's going to repeat. So I think he comes off my board immediately. Yeah, but he won last week.
You are allowed to pick him.
I like to eliminate guys for obvious reasons off the bat. Okay?
Sure.
Jason Day, good on you winning the Byron Nelson last week. This is all about Jon Rahm and Scottie Scheffler. Okay? The battle for number one, for world's number one ranked golfer. Mm-hmm. And for Rahm trying to win the season's second major. Can he go back-to-back? Something that hasn't been done since Spieth back in 2015.
Yep.
And to also win two majors in a season, it's been since Koepka in 19. So Rahm is chasing history in that regard. Justin Thomas, who has won a PGA, is looking to become the fourth back-to-back winner since 1958. He won last year's major, the PGA, but he has really struggled this year. So I'm trying to lean PGA and not live, like tour guys and not live guys. There's 16 of those live dudes that are out there. My thought is to go live and to go against the grain. Phil was the only one of those 16 who has won this event, but I'm not going to go live. I think I went live with the Masters.
You, did. You went Koepka.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
You said live guy.
I just said a live guy.
Which you're almost right with
Koepka. I want to say I went Cam Smith.
Oh, you're right. You did.
Yeah.
But you said a live guy in general. And you were almost right.
Are we allowed to pick a guy who's already teed off?
I don't care.
Scheffler is at 1-under through 8.
I already have my pick locked in, so you can pick whoever you want. There's no rules to this game.
All right, give me Rory.
Rory McIlroy.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, his pairing or his threesome, it's him, Kyle Morikawa. Mm-hmm. Who else is in his group?
So far, I love the pairing.
I think it's JT.
Really? Justin Thomas?
The three of them are all in the top 11 is what I saw in Bolster ranking.
Wow.
Like, you talk about dudes who can put on a clinic. All of them are paired on day one here today.
So, my guy, all I've seen in watching coverage of the PGA Championship leading up to this week and what is necessary for somebody to win in preparation for making this pick is you need to be able to drive the ball well, right?
Some thick rough. Yeah. Beautiful course.
You need to be able to drive
returns.
The ball well, hit your fairways, and, if you hit your fairways, you're in good shape on this course. So, I looked up who's been hitting the ball extremely well off the tee, and who's made drastic improvements off the tee. And this guy stood out to me because over the past 3 months, he's been the best player in the field in the strokes gain metric and ranks third on the tour in total driving. Also, yesterday, when I was out swinging the stick of my own accord with Michael Serber, Aaron Brunk, we were playing. Michael Serber compared me to this man for his slower pace of play. So I'm going to go with one Patrick Cantlay.
Oh, my gosh.
As my pick.
You do realize that is not a compliment, right?
I know.
Okay.
I'm aware. I didn't know I was playing that slow. I didn't think I was. I have actually worked really hard to...
That is something you don't want to be compared
to. But I've worked really hard to... I think he was mainly joking, but yeah. I've worked harder to play faster because I know at the start I was always really nervous about hitting the ball, so I was taking my time. I've worked harder to shorten my pre-swing routine, so I don't do that. But he made a joke as comparing me to Patrick Cantlay, and I was like, "Well, I like Patrick Cantlay to win the PGA Championship, so I'm going to go for my own soul again and pick my man Patrick Cantlay to win the title."
You've got Cantlay, I've got Rory McIlroy. He went off with the 10:01 Eastern Time tee time on number 10 with, yes, I was correct, Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa.
Has Patrick Cantlay teed off yet?
Ooh, let's find out. Cantlay. Of course, I don't know how you want to spell his name. There we go. 8:33 a.m.
He did
with
tee off.
Ricky Fowler and Phil Mickelson.
Oh.
So let's see where.
How's he doing?
Cantlay.
Probably horrible because I'm terrible at picking winners in tournaments for anywhere, including golf.
Oh, no. Apparently, he hasn't gone off. 3:48.
Oh.
Times on the CBS website are wrong, but when I go to the leaderboard.
Gosh dang it, CBS.
Oh, it's because of the frost. It's because of the frost.
Yeah.
So they probably moved those guys that were set to go off in the morning till later
to
in the
afternoon.
Day. Because of the frost delay.
Yeah, well, they're playing in Rochester.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you're playing this tournament in August, like it's supposed to be played in the PGA Championship, that wouldn't happen. Just saying. Going to put that out there. All right, I'm done.
You're so salty. 105th edition.
Well, it's just true.
PGA championship at Oak Hill. Yeah, a lot of talk about the rough.
Last time they're playing up north, PGA Championship, I believe. They're moving it away from Oak Hill. Yeah.
I don't have an opinion, either way.
I just heard that earlier in the week, that apparently this was not where they want to play it at this time of year because of weather, but it was already scheduled, so they didn't want to take it away from Oak Hill.
All right, quick, 30 seconds or less. What are you most looking forward to eat this weekend? I've got food plans tomorrow night. I'm going to my buddies. I love to do this with my daughter because he's got two kids, and we break bread, we vibe, we enjoy some adult beverages, we stay up till 2 a.m., we talk and party, board games, whatever. Kids entertain themselves. When you get to be a parent, this is how you do it.
Sure.
All right? You cook food for everyone.
Yeah.
It's just like it's a little five-person party.
Okay.
Really, that's what it is. No, six. Three little humans and three adults.
Okay.
Six people. So tomorrow night we are going to do a Nashville hot chicken. Okay? I'm going to buy some juicy, fat, succulent breasts. We're going to create the fried batter. We're going to toss it, shake it in there, rub it, get all in there, just massage it in such a way that has never, you know, been fathomable in previous universes.
Yep.
And then we're going to fry that. We're going to batter it and toss it in like some sriracha sweet hot honey sauce. And then that thing's going to come out perfect and golden, and we're either going to throw it on like a pretzel roll, a brioche, or a potato bun.
Brioche.
My thought is the pretzel. Brioche is always my go-to,
okay. But
we'll see what speaks to me when I'm standing in the aisles tomorrow picking out the bread. Add a little bit of some dill pickle chips and then a little bit of coleslaw as well. But we're going to do sweet potato fries and then Brussels sprouts.
Ooh.
As a combo.
Interesting.
And I am so excited for that. That is my Friday night plan. Saturday pool party, my place. Everyone is invited. Okay. At CS Now Tweets, at Kyle Shass, at SportsCon 4.
For the address.
Is how you can RSVP. And I will give you the address. Pool party at my place, Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern. Be there or be square.
This is our relaxation day before Hoover. How we clear our minds and get it ready before we head down to the SEC tournament.
And then we will go to Twisted Putter.
Yes, I'm very excited.
New mini golf place in downtown Winston.
Very excited. So, literally right there.
Literally right down the street.
Yeah.
Right down the street from where we're coming to you right now. So
thrilled for that. Can't wait.
More team building in order with Mr. David Kahn as the crew. Maybe Serber.
Yeah.
We
have to invite him.
Yeah. I invited Brunk earlier.
Yeah. So,
again, everyone's invited.
Yes.
RSVP at Kyle Shass at SportsCon4 at CS Now Tweets. And get up with Serber. Make sure he's okay. @L_Serber.
We do see your DMs, by the way. Serber is locked in a never-ending Hand of the Dirt podcast recording right now. He just texted me saying we're still recording.
Okay.
They are approaching 3.5 hours. What am I most looking forward to eating? Well, first of all, whatever we end up getting into on Saturday for dinner will be great. But
yes.
I am taking the voice of Virginia Tech baseball, Evan Hughes, to lunch tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And we are getting Bad Daddy's Burger Bar.
Oh, very nice.
So I'm very much looking forward to eating a similar thing to what you'll have.
I've sworn them off.
I know.
After my
women's. I know. I'm giving them one more chance.
You tell them the story.
I will. I have it ready.
Oh, that was the game I was – no, it was Iowa because Virginia Tech was gone. That was Iowa LSU.
Yeah.
When I was there.
Yes.
But still, it has a
– yes. So, Evan Hughes, I'll be picking him up. We're going to lunch. I'm also bringing Gus Wedekamp because he worked with Virginia Tech this year, so I'm going to bring him along. We're going to break bread. Be great. See Evan Hughes again.
Okay.
We will go to Bad Daddy's. He's never been there before. He's been to Winston a couple times, taking him over there. I will get the sweet potato tots because they're phenomenal. So sweet potato, just like you.
Yeah.
I'll probably have a burger, not chicken, but still, it'll be juicy. It'll be succulent. I'm excited about it. And hopefully they don't screw me like they screwed you.
Scrupulescent.
So Bad Daddy's Burger Bar is the place to be. Tomorrow at lunch.
All right, that's back. That's it. We're back in your feed Monday morning. We're recording on Sunday. Enjoy the final weekend of the regular season for 96-97% of the entire country. Con and I will be back late Sunday night to your feed on Monday ahead of our trip to Hoover. Download the Varsity Network app if you haven't already. SEC baseball tournament all next week. Every single game you can catch it right in the palm of your hand. Ladies and gentlemen, David Kahn, Kyle Shassberger. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.